Want to see the world from a totally different perspective?
Ready for provocative conversation?
Intriguing stories?
And inspiration?
Then don't touch that dial.
Welcome
to Talk with Francesca.
She'll give you something to talk about all week long. Now, here's Francesca.
Welcome to Talk with Francesca. I'm Francesca, and you're listening to AM 1510 Revolution Boston. The number is 617-237-1234. I'll repeat that number. It's 617-237-1234. Feel free to call in with any questions or comments. I'd love you to chime in. My website is talkwithfrancesca.com, and you can also find me on Facebook at Talk with Francesca. Okay, I have two extraordinary guests today, both who have lived quite, well, unconventional lives, for a period of time anyway. They've seen it all, they've done it all, and now they've written about it all. You're going to know a little bit more today after the show than you knew yesterday, so don't touch that dial. My first guest, Kevin Weeks, co-authored Where's Whitey with New York Times bestselling author Phyllis Karras. Kevin was a longtime friend and top lieutenant to Whitey Bulger, who was, as we know, on the run for 16 years for 19 murders. The book contains an eye-opening account of how Whitey might have spent those 16 years. And although the book is fiction, it's a story of murder, loyalty within the mob, and friendship. One can't help but ask, Kevin Weeks, did this really happen? Immediately following is a discussion with Melissa Phoebos about her memoir, Whip Smart. It's a true story about Melissa's life of 4 years as a professional dominatrix in a New York City dungeon. She'll join us during the second half of Talk with Francesca. All right. Kevin Weeks, author of Where's Whitey, is joining me now live in the studio. Welcome to Talk with Francesca, and thank you for being here, Kevin.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Kevin, as soon as I opened your book in Where's Whitey, it's dedicated with love to Anna, who's taught you what's important in life. Who is Anna?
Anna was my girlfriend, okay. Someone I've known since she was 17 years old. And when I came home from prison, approximately 6 months later, we got together, and she's just kind of, you know, showing me that, you know, things in life are simple, are best.
Okay. So that was going to be my next question, is what did Anna teach you? So is that what you were going to tell me, that what she taught you was that simplicity is best?
Yeah, I mean...
Come on. This is your girlfriend. She's taught you more than that.
Well, my old lifestyle, I mean, you know, was rather expensive, ostentatious and stuff. And, I mean, I had a lot of things, but they really didn't bring me happiness, you know, maybe for the moment.
Yeah.
And now just simple things in life bring me much more joy.
That's great. So in your book, Where's Whitey, let me ask you about the character Joey. Is this Kevin Weeks in the book?
It's loosely based on me.
It is. Okay, so how realistic is your book?
The book is basically what he would be doing, why he's on the run. Some of the events that are in the book happened, and they're disguised. I mean, I guess you would call it a nom de cliff. You know, it's a fiction based on truth. So there's a lot of things in the book that lifelike that actually happened.
Well, when I was reading the book, to me, I felt like I was reading a true story. And I couldn't even, you know, separate out and say, no, this is fiction. To me, it was really true. So how true would you say it is? I mean, is it just kind of loose, or, I mean, did it really, a lot of what was in there happen? Because it seemed like there was so many similarities from the stories that we'd heard.
Well, a lot of things that happened in the book are based on things that happened out here, and, you know, they're embellished somewhat. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's basically what happened, what could have happened.
So why did you write this book? I mean, you wrote Brutal, so I've sort of been there, done that. So why, again, did you write another book?
It was brought to us by a gentleman who reached out to Phyllis and asked if we'd be interested in writing this book. And Phyllis contacted me, and I mean, it sounded like a fun project at the time.
Okay, all right. So I want to ask you, obviously, about Whitey Bulger, right? So there was a lot of trust between you and Whitey, obviously. What do you think it was about you that made Whitey trust you? I mean, you obviously possess certain qualities that he found appealing in a right-hand man. What were those qualities?
Well, I mean, you'd probably have to ask him. But, I mean, a lot of the times, I mean, he would state, you know, he didn't need tough guys as mm-hmm. much as you need smart guys. Mm-hmm. You don't need a big gang. You just need a few committed people. Mm-hmm. And over the course of years, I mean, I didn't start out with him right off the bat doing, you know, all the things that I did. But I did start when I was 18 years old.
Okay, that was another question. You're answering the questions before I get to them. Great. Making my life easy.
I started when I was 18 years old.
18 years old, wow. And you were a bouncer, right, over at Triple O's?
Correct,
right?
In South Boston. Yep, yep. And basically, it was like going to school. I mean, I started out in crime, you know, in kindergarten and went all the way to get my PhD.
Huh. So do you feel any sense of connection now to Whitey?
You know, there's a friendship there.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have run away and, you know, they kind of badmouth them and stuff and everything, and probably deservedly so. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I was around the man for 25 years. And He's a godfather to my oldest son.
Okay.
And we were friends, and there was a trust there. There was a bond there. And, you know, you can't be with someone 6 days, 7 days a week without having a friendship, you know, without talking over things and sharing, you know, different things that go on in your life. And, I have mixed emotions. I mean, because it was a friendship there. We had a lot of good times. And at the same time, at the very end, there's, you know, a betrayal there.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, did he ever disgust you? I mean, when I think of Whitey Bulger, I can't help but wonder if it wasn't something sort of disgusting about him.
Not really. I mean, no. Most of the time when I was with him, it was business, yeah. You know. And the times that we were out and stuff, it was just, you know, going out and having a good time. We all kind of kept our personal lives separate from our business lives and from each other.
So you didn't share personal stories with him? And
yeah, you know, naturally we sort of, you know, there was things, you know, how's the kids doing, how's the family, how's this, and, you know, different times problems would arise and we'd, you know, take care of them, whether it was with his extended family or mine or whatever. So, yeah, we talked about different things. But as far as real personal things, I mean, we kind of dealt with them ourselves. I think it's this, you know, in our culture, it's a sign of weakness to share, you know, details with someone else.
Okay. All right. If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. We're here with Kevin Weeks, ex-right-hand man to Whitey Bulger. What was the first thing that you thought of when you found out Whitey was an informant? Of course, you knew I was going to ask you that question, right? So, right.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, when I first heard it, it was disbelief.
Yeah.
That I didn't hear that right. And what happened was when I finally later in the week went up to see Steve Flemmy in Plymouth and he confirmed it to me, it was disgust, really. It was, you know, how could this be? You know, for 25 years, I'm out there doing your bidding. I'm right beside you on everything we're doing. And we went as far as killing other informants. And then I find out that they were informants.
So you felt, did you feel sad? Were you mad? Did you want to hurt him?
No, I didn't want to hurt him. I mean, you know, anger.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, I just wanted to basically, what I would have loved to do is just distance myself from the whole thing.
So were there ever times, that's what I wanted to ask you also, were there ever times in your career that you wished that you were not part of this and you could have just left?
Yeah.
Obviously, that was one of them.
Yeah, there was a time, I mean, when my first son was born, I wanted to get out of it, get away, and because I didn't want my children being brought up in this environment.
Did your wife know that you were involved?
She knew I was involved with them. She didn't know to what extent. She believed I was involved in, you know, gambling, some loan shark, and I owned a few stores, so she wasn't, you know, privy to any of the serious crimes that we committed.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about Catherine Krieg.
Greg.
Okay. All right. Well, you got me there. Okay. What was her attraction to Whitey?
You know, Catherine is a really decent person.
Didn't she go to dental hygiene
school? She was
school
a dental hygienist.
And had a really promising future. I mean, why would a woman like that go after someone like Whitey, do you think?
Well, you know, the way he treated her. I mean,
How was that?
Well, he treated her well. And, you know, she probably...
What was well?
Well, I mean, they enjoy each other's company. They dine together. They go for walks together. I mean, just simple things. They enjoyed each other's company. And he's a different person away from business. I mean,
how?
Well, everyone can compartmentalize their life.
Yeah.
And so,
well, some people can more than others. Yeah but,
and he's one of these people that can.
And you can as well.
Yeah,
right?
You can turn it off. I mean, you don't bring your work home with you. And she probably saw him in a different light, how he treated her, you know, how he was nice, attentive, and everything to her.
Was he loving to her?
I believe so.
So you think there's a side of him that actually has feelings?
Yeah.
But he's a sociopath.
Yeah, he is a sociopath.
Are you?
It depends on your definition of a sociopath.
What is your definition of a sociopath?
Well, I mean, I don't consider myself a sociopath because I've turned that off, that part of my life. You know, I mean, basically someone's a sociopath does things outside the norm of society and doesn't bother them, you know.
So do you feel that what you did was the norm in society?
No, if it was normal in society, everyone would be doing it. It'd be you know, there would only probably be maybe 100 million people in the United States instead of 300 million. You know, you hear people all the time when they have arguments, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to kill this one. So,
oh my
no.
God. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, anyway. All right. In your book, Where's Whitey? Whitey had some pretty horrific nightmares. You know, the way it was described in the book anyway, that it was just like, wow. I mean, you know, waking up sweating and screaming, and Catherine apparently had concerns that people would hear, right?
Correct.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Did he actually have these nightmares the way they were described in the book, Where's Whitey?
Oh, most definitely. Okay. What happened was when Whitey was transferred from Alcatraz, he went to Leavenworth. And they had this program there, the MK Ultra program, uh-huh. which he volunteered for. And it was Dr. Carl Pfeiffer that ran it, and it was sponsored by Coca-Cola. And they basically said that if he did this program, he would get credit for good time. But in reality, what it was the CIA was running this program, and they were giving him LSD. And it was more or less to find a truth serum instead of a cure for schizophrenia.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a completely different analysis of why I thought he was having nightmares. I actually wondered whether something really traumatic may have happened in his childhood that made him such a violent and rageful personality that he was kind of acting out in his dreams. So you're saying that it had nothing to do with that at all? You don't know of any history of his childhood or anything that may have made him the way he became,
no,
but rather it was the LSD?
I think he was an aggressive person by nature, type A personality, and I think the LSD brought out the violent side in him, or enhanced it anyways.
So then do you think it was the LSD that, from what I understand, that he actually loved killing, as in when he killed, it was like a vacation? It was like he had just taken a two-week vacation?
Yeah, it was. I mean, when he killed someone, he was nice and relaxed afterwards.
Why would you think that was? I mean, that's kind of a peculiar way to go about getting relaxed, you know?
Well, it probably got out all his anger and stuff, you know? It's like a fighter going to the gym and hitting the heavy bag. When he comes out of the gym, he's kind of relaxed and spent. Same with him.
Huh, yeah. Okay, let's see. What was there a defining moment with Whitey when you knew there was just no turning back? That you were really in for the long haul? And if so, can you remember that day, sort of set the scene there?
Yeah, I mean, when I knew there was no turning back was when the murder of Brian Halliman and Michael mm-hmm. Donahue. Now I'm involved in a double homicide, and I knew at that point there was no turning back.
There was no turning back. And did you at that time wish that you could have, that you had never gotten into it?
At that time, no. I really never thought of it. Years later, I did.
Okay. Okay, we're coming up against a break here. You're listening to Talk with Francesca. We're here with Kevin Weeks, and we will be back in just a few, so stay tuned.
Are you feeling like your living space is tired and a little dull? Maybe it could use a fresh look? Do you know that a simple change like adding a piece of artwork can give your space a whole new life? Hi, I'm Francesca. You know me from Talk with Francesca on Sundays right here on WWZN. Well, I'm also an acrylic painter and colorist, and I've been told again and again that my paintings exude a vibrant energy that's not found elsewhere. And that's why since 2005, I've been exhibiting my artwork at Massachusetts General Hospital and Sovereign Bank. My inspiration comes simply from my love of color, so come play with me at my website at talkwithfrancesca.com and tell me if you don't think a painting in your space may be just the transformation that's needed. You know, decorating doesn't have to be intimidating. Bringing in a painting is a simple yet creative way to change an old existing look into a brand new space. And will give your home a breath of fresh air just in time for spring. Browse around and delight yourself in the joy of color, because that's what your home is calling for. Contact me today at 203-451-ARTS. And we'll set up a time for a private viewing at my gallery in Swampscott. Or for a sneak preview, go to talkwithfrancesca.com and view Francesca's artwork. That number again is 203-451-ARTS, A-R-T-S, or visit talkwithfrancesca.com. Are you looking for an authentic Italian meal in an intimate setting? Then you'll want to dine at Terra Mia's. This North End Italian restaurant provides a simply divine culinary experience and, as quoted in Zagat's restaurant guide, pastas without compare. And it's reasonably priced. This North End gem will keep you coming back. Terra Mia is simply the best Italian restaurant in all of Boston. Call 617-523-3112, 617-523-3112, or terramiarestaurante.com.
The bed feels warmer, sleeping here alone.
You know, welcome back. You're listening to Talk with Francesca. We're here with Kevin Weeks, author of Where's Whitey? Ex-right hand man to Whitey Bulger. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you.
Kevin, can you describe to our listeners a little bit about loyalty to the mob?
I don't know about loyalty to the mob as much as loyalty to each other, the people you're involved with, that you're, you know, working with, that you're committing crimes with. You know, it's been my experience, and sadly to say, that there was no loyalty. You know, this was supposed to be this big gang, and it ended up being a gang of two, and everybody else was expendable.
Right. What was it like to grow up in Southie? Did you have to be a fighter?
You didn't have to be a fighter. When I say that, is like you didn't have to be a tough guy. You did have to fight. You know, when it came time to put up, you know, there was no shame in losing as long as you fought.
As long as you fought. Your brother William has described, according to Wikipedia, the atmosphere in your childhood as follows. Smart was good, but having the ability to beat someone senseless, now that was real power. Education was often talked about in the apartment, but always with the implied threat that if your marks weren't acceptable, be ready to give up your soul to God because your ass belonged to our father, and A wasn't acceptable. Sounds like a brutal environment.
My father was a hard man. I mean, he was, you know, everyone says that, you know, it's a cliche, old school, but he was. I remember one time I came home with a report card. I had all A's and one B, and, you know, I got smacked around, and I was on punishment for 2 weeks.
Wow. So do you think possibly that your childhood could have possibly shaped your choices in working with Whitey?
No, not really.
No. Was there any similarity between Whitey and your father?
No. I mean, I had the same opportunities that my brothers had. My brothers both went to Harvard and done well for themselves. You know, I don't blame anyone but myself. It was choices I made in life.
Are you close to your brothers?
Very close.
That's fantastic. So, also, in a chat with Boston.com many years ago, you say that staying along the straight and narrow is harder some days than others, like AA. Could you possibly ever be seduced back into that lifestyle again?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll be out and I'll be around and I'll see things. And, you know, the average person doesn't recognize, and I pick up right up on it.
Like what?
Oh, when people are doing things, when they're, you know, they're kind of shady.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, you see someone driving around in a nice car, and they don't go to work, and, you know, they throw money around and stuff. You know they're on the shady side.
And
you know?
So, and it's attractive to you?
Well, it's attractive to relieve them of their money, yeah.
So, but why, you compared it to AA, so why would that be? I mean, AA is like, Alcoholics Anonymous, so an addiction. So do you feel that that was an addiction?
No, it's not an addiction. I mean, I miss, you know, in a sense, you miss the adrenaline rush and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the reason I equated it to it is because every day, you know, every morning I go to work, I get up, I go to work, and, you know, I just promise myself I won't commit a crime today, you know, and that's how I feel, you know.
That's fair. So I want to read an excerpt from your book. Let's see. After Joey's out of jail and looking for work. So, didn't know you were into putting things together, Joey, he says, barely attempting to hide the sarcasm in his voice. Thought ripping them apart was more your strength. Ooh. So what was it like to go back into the world after prison? Did you expect to come back and after prison go right back into working in the mob?
No. I was too well known at that point. My face was all over TV and, you know, we had written another book, Brutal. Mm-hmm. And so basically crime wasn't an option at that point. Okay. I was too exposed.
So, okay, being too exposed is one reason not to, but if you weren't exposed, would that have been something that you would have wanted to go back to?
No. You know, it just it wasn't an option, and I wouldn't want to go back to it because, you know, the sad part is the people that I trusted for 25 years, the betrayal there.
Right.
So I really very cautious these days of who I trust.
Who you trust. Do you believe there's something beyond here, like what goes around comes around?
I hope not.
Okay. All right. Fair answer. Have you ever thought maybe about speaking to kids? I know Anna, what does she, work in an inner city?
Yeah, she works public school system. Okay. And she teaches during the day, and then she has classes at night, high school students that need extra points to graduate.
So have you ever thought maybe about speaking to kids in tough neighborhoods about maybe how the other side might look attractive, but that it actually really isn't? And sometimes a really bad situation you can turn into something positive. Like, you know, what's his name? Derek Sanderson. He was, you know, an alcoholic, and, you know, he was basically on a park bench, and then he turned around and spoke to children. Have you ever thought about doing anything like that?
Oh, I've done that several times.
Oh, yeah.
I've gone to schools, and I've talked to, you know, students, mostly seniors and juniors that are getting ready to graduate and their choices in life and, you know, decisions that I made in life and how it affected me and what they have to look forward to if they make those decisions.
Okay, good, good. I have a list of questions from listeners, and I want to see how many we can get through. Hopefully, we can get through most of them. Lauren from Somerville, can you describe how you felt when you heard Whitey was captured?
I was woken out of a sound sleep. It was 5:30 in the morning, and my phone kept on ringing. I was getting text messages, and, you know, the first one said they caught the big guy, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And I was shocked. Uh-huh. I wasn't shocked at the geographical, as far as the climate and stuff, that, you know, being on the beach and the warm weather and stuff. I was shocked that he was caught in this country. I never thought he'd be caught.
You never thought he'd be caught or caught in this where did you think he was?
I thought he was over in Europe.
Oh, okay. So, but describe how you felt. How did that feel to you? Did you feel happy?
No,
did you feel sad?
To be honest with you, I felt sickened by the whole thing because I knew it was all going to start over again. It was all going to be brought up in the papers, the news coverage, you know, going through this probably for another 2-3 years. So I was sickened when he was caught.
Okay. Here's someone from Southie. So I don't know who someone from Southie is, but whoever that is, it's someone from Southie. In reading your book, you speculated on much of what Whitey was doing or not doing. How much of what you wrote is proven to be accurate?
Well, I don't think any of it's proven to be accurate in the second book, Where's Whitey? I mean, those are questions that only he could answer.
Okay.
What he was doing in his travels.
Okay. Joanne from South Boston, are you ever afraid that someone might attempt, or worse, follow through with making you accountable by hurting you or your family?
Well, if someone comes after me, I mean, you know, I always expect, and I know my surroundings and look for people and stuff. Now, if someone was to go after my family, you know, then we might as well just declare war, because that's off the table. My family's innocent of anything that I've done. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should hold anybody's family accountable for what one of their, you know,
right.
relatives do.
Fair answer. Okay. Doreen from New Haven, Connecticut. Were you ever afraid Whitey would hurt you?
No, I wasn't afraid of Jimmy at all. Stevie. Stevie was unpredictable, yeah. You never knew what he was thinking and how he'd react.
Well, what reason would he have to hurt you?
He wouldn't, but he's very explosive. And he's just the type of guy that, you know...
More explosive than Whitey?
Whitey was more dangerous, but he was... Everything that he did was thought out. And
what a waste of a great mind, though, huh?
Well, the difference is Whitey would do it in cold blood and Stevie would do it in hot blood.
Oh, okay. What was, Mark from Carver, what was the worst part of your job?
Worst part of my job? There's a lot of things that we did over the years that weren't pleasant and stuff. I'd have to say the worst part was when we had to exhume the bodies and move them, When, Whitey and myself and Steve and stuff, we exhumed these bodies and had to move them.
So it's like murder twice.
Well, you're defiling the bodies twice. Mm-hmm. And plus, they were in different stages of decomposition, so it wasn't pleasant.
Mm. Jesse from Somerville. Although gangs are a part of Southeast history, they usually had limited territory that they call their own. What do you think made it possible for Whitey to gain so much control over Southie?
Well, he gained control over Southie during the gang wars with the Mullins and the Colleens, and they joined forces at the end. But what gave him greater control was that he joined up with Winter Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1978, when most of the members of Winter Hill went away for the racetrack fix, him and Steve, he ended up being on top, and then they just took over everything.
Okay. Mark from Worcester. Were you always doing mob business, or did you have a life outside of it? Like, what'd you do in your free time?
Oh, my free times? I'd spend with my boys, play sports, go out with my friends, and had an average life, basically, outside of crime. The only problem was that, crime consumed most of my time.
I have a couple more questions, but I want to ask you, what do your boys do? That's my question.
Both of them are in the trades. One's a carpenter, one's a laborer.
Okay. Dottie from South Boston. Let's see. Oh, nope, I got that one. Okay. Uncle Joe, do you think when Whitey is in prison, someone will kill him because he's such a rat?
No, I don't think they'll get the opportunity. I think they'll keep him in protective custody. He's probably in lockup 23 hours a day, and the government's not going to let anything happen to him. They want to get him on the stand.
Okay. Someone who is glad that you've turned the corner. Is it true that you give a portion of the proceeds of your book to the families that lost the loved ones?
Correct. The book, Brutal, when it was first written, the victims' families decided that my only asset, because the government had taken everything at that point, was my story. So we wrote the book, and 50% of my proceeds go to the victims' families.
Okay. All right. Ray from Milford, where will Joey be in Where's Whitey 10 years from now? In a movie?
I don't think so. He's probably got about as much chance of playing the NFL as being in a movie.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, Where's Whitey is a page turner. Do you have any book signings scheduled?
There's a few scheduled. I don't know where they are right now. That's something you have to talk to the agent about.
Okay. All right. Kevin Weeks, thank you for being on Talk with Francesca today. All right. We are up against a break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking to Melissa Phoebos, who will be discussing her memoir, Whip Smart, The Secret Life of a Dominatrix, when we come back. So stay tuned.